Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, thank you for listening on 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you want to stay up to date with everything happening here, you can listen anytime, anywhere, for free on the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can listen on demand anytime. You can even rewind if you miss a segment. You want to go back and listen. Dennis Fuller is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is each and every Friday. Of course, it's another Football Friday. He's the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. Episodes available each and every week. Also, don't forget to miss out on, or I should say, don't miss out on tomorrow's number one pregame tailgate show for all things college football. It's like VSiN College Football Betting Tailgate Show, 9 a.m. Central Time. He's also the host of VSiN Primetime, airing on weeknights on X at 1, Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
It is a good day, man. It's a good day. Thursday night football was wild. The right side got home, which was important to some. Me. And I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready for a weekend. You know, it's funny. I don't know how you are when it comes to college and the slate. But like on Monday, I was like, I don't know. That's not that great. And as the week's gone on, I'm like, you know what? It's a pretty good card this weekend. So I'm fired up, man. I think it's going to be a good weekend. Obviously, the two big ones in the SEC going back to back. And much to the chagrin of a certain coach in the state of Mississippi that is not thrilled about a 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central start
time. He just
time.
Hates it for the fans. He's also, but I'll let you know, he's also kind of doing the, he's kind of actually, Lane has actually done a little bit more politicking. It's a big gripe amongst his fan base. And he's, I think he was kind of doing the, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, it was the opposite of James Franklin, who
yes.
tried to play the, I love noon kickoffs, they're yeah. great. This is the best ever. It's like, stop lying. Like,
and I think Lane is, you know, I've told you, like, there's no denying Tiger Stadium at night is a great scene, and it's unbelievable. But I would argue every stadium at night is significantly better. The crowd's always more liquored up. You can even see it in the NFL. Like, last night, how much more different is that than a noon Ravens game? Like, last night, that place was hopping. Like, it's a better environment where LSU deserves all the credit in the world is like they branded it Tiger Stadium at night, and so they just get night games and everybody gets the great environment.
If you're ESPN, because that's what it comes down to, right? You're trying to attract the most viewers possible. I think they made the right decision. I think you go Bama LSU at night because of the allure of Tiger Stadium at night. Now, you could have done one of those funky 6 and 9 things. Remember when they tried to do that?
Yes, I do, because I would oftentimes, that was back when I was covering.
A&M was usually in that like 9 yeah, o'clock so for, Eastern
it
window.
Was 5. It was 5 Central,
yeah.
at 8:15. And that Ole Miss-Alabama game in Tuscaloosa, you know, the one where the helmet pass, where Chad Kelly knocked him off, that game kicked off at like 8:30, and that game had at least five turnovers. It was the longest football game I've ever covered in my entire life, and it's and like because it not only was it supposed to start at 8:15, it got held because I hope you're sitting down for this. The game before it ran long, and then they kicked it off. It was that yes, I do remember when they used to try to split brand it, like they'd put a game at 5 Central and then another one at like 8:30. But then I do think the league stepped in. That was somewhat of a byproduct of, remember the Tennessee-Ole Miss game when Lane went back to Knoxville?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that game kicked at 9 Eastern, and one of the byproducts was the SEC were like, we're not starting games like post 8 ever again.
Yeah, there's a difference between starting North Carolina Duke in college hoops at
correct.
9. The game's going to be over in 2 hours and 15 minutes at max. College football games, especially in the SEC, go 4, you know. So,
well, and then like you know, the crowd's been drinking all day, and I mean, I'm not shaming here, but like that was the other thing that has helped is now ESPN just has control of the whole menu. So for a while, they were trying to balance that CBS would get basically the best game every week. And now that they control the whole slate, there's a little bit more rhythm to it.
Well, if this was last year, right, Alabama LSU's probably is the one primetime CBS game.
Likely.
That was such a weird rule that they could only put one SEC game in primetime. Remember when Tim Brando got all fired up that they put Notre Dame, Georgia in primetime, and then the ratings were like astronomically high? He's like, oh, I guess they were right.
Tim was an SEC purist, despite not being an SEC. Despite going to Louisiana Monroe. By the way, they're on the card this week.
Not a big fan of the Catholic institution in Northwest Indiana. Just pointing that out there.
He is Catholic.
But the
That's
ESPN...
Surprising. Maybe he's a BC guy, but he is maybe Catholic. He is Catholic.
Or maybe he just doesn't like that they're independent. That always gets people
That probably, yeah. Playing a conference. That's a Brando thing. Playing a conference.
But this Ole Miss game probably would go head-to-head if you're ESPN. Would you throw it on head-to-head on ABC primetime last year? I know this is ifs and buts, and it's a stupid conversation because now
probably
ESPN
not because the conference, they were still kind of working together. They didn't like doing that, and I think also part of the contract for CBS was, well, A, it was like the pecking order, how they would pick the games. CBS would get one, and then like ESPN would get two. I don't think ESPN was putting SEC games on ABC. I think they were putting the ACC game.
They were doing ESPN on SEC, right?
Correct.
SEC on ESPN. Like 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central.
Correct. So likely, the truth is, Lane catches kind of a break. At least they put it at 2:30. That was a game that ESPN had just been putting at 11 a.m. Like that was the game that when they'd leave game day, they'd want to go to a good game to counter big noon.
Yeah. Scheduling, I don't know. I kind of like getting nerdy in scheduling, but I know that is I'm in a very rare minority in that spot. But I would say I kind of like the schedule this week.
I think it rocks.
I like Ole Miss being in that middle of the afternoon game because, look, I am a Notre Dame fan, as many of you probably have picked up on. I am going to have the game on, obviously, as they play Florida State. But I'm going to more than likely have sound up on Bama LSU.
Yeah, I other than the early window, which there's just not a ton that I'm excited about, I love this weekend. Like I because one of the other things that I truly
and
love,
we have a good late night game.
Exactly. Like, we have a late night game so that
Holy
when
we war late night.
When we lose every bet, when we lose every bet, we got something to chase with. That's great. Also, the thing that I really love about this weekend, because I'm of two minds. I do not buy the argument when you have a 12-team playoff that it doesn't diminish the regular season. What it does also, though, is make the month of November awesome. Because we have taken away, even though Vanderbilt has turned out to be an incredibly credible team, Alabama losing to Vanderbilt didn't rip Alabama's guts out. Like it used to. And you do still have the chances to get back. But what we've added is we've added an extra month where we've had more teams still in it. And one of my favorite things to watch in sports is what do you do under the gun? And we got several teams under the gun this week, and that's what I can't wait for.
You hit it, man. And I know people, it's going to water it down. I think this is the perfect year to have the expanded playoff because there is no clear dominant team. Now, is that to say that Georgia won't win the national championship? No, they certainly could still win it. Ohio State is the favorite in the betting market to win the championship, but they lost to Oregon. They should have, you know, they were right there with Nebraska. You know, they could have lost to Penn State. These teams are all vulnerable, but to me, why I am so excited about Alabama LSU, not only because it's one of the best spectacles in the sport, having Death Valley at night, but it's an elimination game. And I know Brian Kelly tried to poo-poo that, but he's wrong. This is an elimination game. The loser of this game is done from the playoff. The winner is in great shape to make the college football playoff. Ole Miss, if they lose, they're done. I don't think I don't see a path for Ole Miss. So does that desperation show tomorrow afternoon as Ole Miss has to win that game at home, and Georgia really doesn't. Now, Georgia could lose and then beat Tennessee next week, and they're fine. But I do agree that I think you're getting these games and the importance of these games to the college football playoff. And, you know, more teams are involved now. And, you know, we talked about it briefly, BYU, Utah. Like, that rivalry is real, man. Those two universities do not like each other. And those two fan bases do not like each other. And they haven't played in a couple of years. And now Utah, who's having a disappointing season, they've got a chance to ruin things for their arch rival. Like, that's a fun little nugget we've got for tomorrow. So, yeah, I was in the second they talked about the expansion. I didn't want it to go to 8. Once they told me about 12, I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of in on 12. And I think we're getting the fruits of that this weekend with a really interesting card up and down.
Yeah, and I think I do lean towards your right that Alabama-LSU is an elimination game. The only thing I'm leaving room for...
I think more so LSU than Bama.
That was exactly where I was going to go. You could talk me into there's enough football left that Alabama could backdoor their way in simply because of the Georgia win.
Yeah.
But I think you're right in that... Because the other thing, like, I was going to ask, what did you think about the rankings? Because the thing that stood out to me was 4 Big Ten, 4 SEC, Notre Dame, an ACC, a Big 12 team, and the G5 team. I didn't think that was coincidence.
I didn't really have a big issue with it. I think Indiana, I don't know why Penn State's 6. I guess because you lost close. Who's your best win? Same goes for Texas, but I think it will sort itself out. I think Indiana's is in a decent spot. I think BYU, who, full disclosure, I have bet against this week. I think they were a bit overlooked here.
Are we still playing Zach Wilson's brother?
I don't know. Or the kid Rose, whatever. Give me a bye week, Kyle Whittingham, chance to ruin BYU's season. Give me.
You were whispering sweet nothings to me when you said, like, spoiler for BYU. Like,
oh yeah. Like, BYU, look, Indiana's a full-on freight train. I have learned my lesson.
They're off the card.
I'm not touching them.
I'm not betting on them because I know the moment I hop on is the moment they won't cover.
Oh, 100%.
So I'm avoiding
that's
it.
That's just science.
Obviously, they will be on the card whenever they play Ohio State.
I thought, for me, the biggest takeaways, and it was funny, I was texting with someone, and I texted them, I think... So on Saturday night, and we talked about this on Tuesday, Saturday night when Kansas State lost to Houston and Iowa State lost to Texas Tech, I tweeted out, Boise State's going to have a really good opportunity to get a bye. We talked about it on Tuesday. This is the highest ranking a G5 team has ever been in the initial ranks.
Yeah, I was with you. I actually thought they were the biggest winner.
I think they are in a phenomenal spot because the next closest Big 12 team is Iowa State at 17. Then it goes to Kansas State at 19 and Colorado at 20. Like, is there a world where one of those teams eventually leapfrogs them? It's certainly possible. But look, Penn State's getting the benefit of the doubt for a close loss to Ohio State. Boise State smoked Washington State, who the committee ranked 21st, and lost by 3 to the number one team in the country. So I think Boise State is in a pretty good spot, and they will be big-time Utah fans this weekend, obviously outside of, you know, beating Nevada. But no, I wasn't ready to, you know, light up the microphone and go scorched earth. And I think we've learned, too, over time, it's probably going to figure itself out. It tends to always do that. So, look, right now, if the season was over, we'd have games at Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Tennessee. That doesn't suck for the first weekend of the college football playoff.
No, and I also kind of, like, did I think Penn State deserved to be there? No. At the same time, I wasn't, like, furious, because in a certain way, it's like, all right, they put Ohio State over Georgia. I felt like they needed a little bit more than just, well, they lost by one when Alabama or when Georgia lost by six. You know what I mean? Like, I think they, and so it's like, well, we're going to keep Penn State up there to beef up Ohio State, because in the end, it didn't matter. Georgia, they basically took the cop out of, they put Ohio State in front of Georgia, but because Ohio State is not the conference champion yet, Georgia still gets the two seed. And it was kind of the same thing for me with BYU. It's like, okay, yes, they had the top 25 wins, and I do think that they're one of the teams that is probably getting underappreciated this year. But at the same time, it was like, functionally, it was the same whether or not they were, like, I didn't think they were going to be ranked better than fifth. So functionally, they were still going to be the same seed that they were no matter what. And then the biggest reason I thought Boise was the winner was not only for the reasons that you talked about with a path to perhaps a bye, there's such a gap between them and another G5 team that it was, to me, it was very clear. Boise, here's the path. You win out, it's all yours.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's done. I mean, their win over Washington State has continued to get better every day. Their loss to Oregon gets better every day. You know, I think for them, I guess it doesn't really matter now if you're Boise State, if UNLV gets a rematch. I mean, you could have the discussion, what would they prefer?
I think they'd probably prefer
to play Colorado State.
I agree.
And just,
I think they're destroy them. And while they've owned UNLV in recent memory, I just would rather play the worst team.
Yeah, and I think UNLV, I was at the game a couple Friday nights ago. I thought UNLV actually outplayed them. I thought they had a really good game plan. I thought they stubbed their toe a little bit. Boise State converted some fourth downs. You know, the interesting thing, too, is, you know, Boise State gets the Friday night slot on Fox, or excuse me, Saturday night slot on Fox, and there was part of me that's like, do they just go nuclear with Ashton Jeanty? Honestly, they should be smart here. I don't think they should. I think they should start limiting his number of carries. Like, I get it. You're Boise State. You've never won a Heisman Trophy before in your school's history. You've also never had a legitimate shot to play for a national championship, right? That Black Friday, they lost to Kaepernick in Nevada, and they would have been, I think, in the college national championship however many years ago. Was that like 09 or 2010 or whatever
it was? That was Kellen Moore. That was Kellen Moore. I want to say that was like 08, 09.
Yeah, I remember watching that in a bar. I think it was my, I think it was 09, because I think it was the first year I had out of college. Regardless, I'd be curious to see what they do with Jeanty on Saturday night. But yeah, I mean, that's just another wrinkle. And, you know, I know Memphis has obviously kind of slipped here, losing to UTSA last weekend. The AAC seems to be in not in a great spot to get into the college football playoff with Army, you know, only 25th. Their quarterback is hurt. He's more than likely not going to play. The betting market's telling you he's not going to play. Tulane's got two losses, but
I do think Tulane has a path. Their path is this.
They'll get in if Boise loses.
Yes.
You have to be a conference champion, correct, in order to get the G5 bid.
Well,
Boise State,
you could also talk me into, though, if Boise loses one of these remaining games before the title game, that it's such a bad loss that if Tulane keeps, because I think Tulane's the best team in the conference, in the AAC.
I agree. And I, betting market would agree, too. They're now the favorite to win.
I'm so upset at myself. When we were talking about bets this summer, I was like, man, that Tulane price to win the AAC was tasty. It was like plus 500 or something like that. I was like, that's a school that's got a good roster. And to me, because one of these losses for Boise could be bad, Tulane has a chance to get back into it, because like there'll be just such a bad loss, and Tulane's two losses are Kansas State at the buzzer and, you know, a two-score loss at OU that, you know, that game was what, a possession with like 5 minutes to go?
Yeah. I mean, they were up on, like you said, I think the time to buy Tulane was when everybody was going gaga over Army and Navy being undefeated.
The time to buy Tulane was when they were playing Louisiana Lafayette.
Yeah.
Because that was in that stretch. Okay, so here's the other thing, though, I was thinking about. Because I do agree with you. Georgia's clearly not done if they lose on Saturday. Because they'll still have a Tennessee shot.
And a win over Texas on the road.
What if that win over Texas doesn't hold up?
I guess my question would be, how does it not? Like, Texas, let's look at their schedule. They play Florida, who's going to be starting a Yale transfer this weekend. They play at Arkansas, home to Kentucky. Like, even if Texas loses to Texas A&M, 10-2 Texas is getting in the playoff. Whether you like it or not, they're getting
in. No, I agree with you. I do think that game in Fayetteville could get a little weird. Because you talk about, if you use your Utah example of spoiling BYU, I mean, we heard Pittman say over the summer that, you know, maybe it was Sark accused Arkansas of hating Texas more than loving Arkansas, and they asked Pittman about it. He's like, that sounds about right. Like, he didn't even deny it. He's like, yeah, that's about right. I leave room for, you know, if Arkansas gets the right type of game in Fayetteville next week, maybe. But I mean, I wouldn't. I'm not sitting here right now stumping that Arkansas is going to beat Texas. But, like, what if you have that and then they lose to A&M on the last night of the year and they're 9-3?
It's certainly possible, but still I think a win on the road at Texas, even if they were to kind of fall apart down the stretch. By the way, look ahead line in that game, Texas 13.5 over Arkansas, if you're looking to take the dog in that spot.
I think it's going to matter. I took some gross dogs this week. I took nasty dogs. I mean, I think I took nasty dogs that even you wouldn't take.
I did have Air Force last week. That was pretty ugly. But we got some fortunate news right before kickoff that Daly was out. I don't have any. Let me ask you this.
All right.
Because this is a question to ponder for the listeners out there. A double-digit underdog has won outright every single week this year. Five of them hit last week. Look at the board. What is a double-digit underdog that can win outright this week? For those trying to remember, last week, Texas Tech plus 13.5 beat Iowa State. Rice plus 12.5 beat Navy. Houston plus 12.5 beat Kansas State. Hawaii plus 11.5. My man, Timmy Chang, baby, beat Fresno State, and Louisville, throw up the L's, beat Clemson as an 11-point dog. We've seen a double-digit dog win every single week this year. Does the trend continue, and if so, who is it going to be?
All right, here are my candidates. Tell me agree or disagree.
Okay.
Georgia Tech at home against Miami. Yeah.
So, quick note on that one. I love Georgia Tech if I get word Haynes King is playing. I can't bet him without Haynes King.
I agree. I'm gambling and saying that he is.
Okay. So, I wouldn't disagree with that. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Then, let's see. I mean, is it possible Michigan still has a
You got to put him on the list. You got to put him on the list.
It's a player thing, right?
Right. Like, it's still a good defense. Do I trust their quarterback? Hell no. But I think you got to put them on the list as if Michigan beat Indiana. By the way, do you know the last time Indiana was a favorite against Michigan?
The 50s.
1968.
Okay, so I was close.
Not that far off. And there are two touchdown favorite. I'm not betting Indiana. I'm not betting Michigan, people. I get it. 8-0 straight up, 8-0 ATS run, covering by over 20 points per game. They are a absolute juggernaut. But if Michigan won this game, I wouldn't be crazy.
Right. I'm just simply
looking. I'm just putting it on the list.
Correct. I think it deserves to be on the list. Again, not if I believed in it, I would take Michigan 14.5. You know what I mean? Right. Like it's, and I can tell you all right now, it ain't on the card.
What about Washington? Does Penn State have a...
Maybe the old hangover.
Our undefeated season is over, lost. My only concern about that... And look, we're trying to find the double-digit underdog, so you have to get a little crazy here. It is a whiteout game. Washington is coming off the USC win. They're traveling across country, all of that. I think it's worth being on the list.
I would add it to the list. The only thing I would say in response to it is... While Franklin struggles beating Ohio State and good Michigan, he's pretty damn good at beating who he's supposed to beat.
I agree. Yeah, he's kind of like Brian Kelly light.
Yeah.
He wins the games he's supposed to, but doesn't really step up in those big moments. Do we know who's starting for Oklahoma State? Is it Rangel? Is he back?
So he had the concussion against BYU, and then I thought they turned to a third guy.
Would I be surprised if Oklahoma State, who, by the way, is winless in the Big 12, you've had Mike Gundy with the old "I'm sorry if you were offended" comment, which is always my favorite.
On election night. Quite the news dump.
They got destroyed by Arizona State at home. I'm not betting them, but if we're looking for a double-digit dog, I don't think TCU's that good. So Oklahoma State, 10.5-point dog, could they win outright? What's the line from Christmas Vacation? I wouldn't be more surprised if I woke up with my head sewn to the carpet.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be stunned if Oklahoma State
TCU. It's probably the lowest buy point for Oklahoma State.
No doubt. If you're gonna talk double digit dogs, you gotta talk about the boys on the island. Could the mighty Timmy Changs get me triumphantly over my win total of 4.5 with a stunner of UNLV? They did it 2 years ago. Now, big caveat, Barry Odom wasn't the coach of UNLV then. This program is drastically different with Barry Odom. But if you're watching late night on CBS Sports Network and Hawaii's got a touchdown lead, I don't think it'd be crazy.
Okay, I was trying to see. So we mentioned Louisville last week, Houston, Tech, the Raiders. And do we mention Rice over Navy?
Yeah, yeah. Those were the five.
The thing that would be interesting is, I'm more curious about, in that same vein, is there, because we keep talking about the big games this weekend, is there a result that upsets the apple cart? Like, is there a game?
Georgia Tech beating Miami.
Yeah.
I think Georgia Tech beating Miami, that is, they have consistently played with their food, Miami. Look, betting against Cam Ward can be a very painful experience, but you're talking about a coach in Brent Pry that thrives in this underdog role. And if we've seen it, when Haynes King is right, this is a pretty formidable football team. And, you know, I'm curious what that game would have looked like at the Falcon Stadium when Georgia Tech played Notre Dame if King played.
Yeah.
But he didn't, and Notre Dame just obliterated the backup quarterback. I think early on in the day, Georgia Tech could make things a little wacky for the college football world. I think they could give Miami a handful.
And to your point, though, about Penn State and Washington, the other thing that was interesting to me is that while the Big Ten, I think, had four of the top eight teams from a ranking standpoint, I don't believe they had another team in the top 25. If Penn State takes that second loss, is that kind of a playoff eliminator?
Should be. If Penn State loses to Washington, look at who they have left on their schedule. What can they go to the table and be like, hey, let us in. We're 10-2. We beat West Virginia. You know, it's like, that's what you get with this unbalanced super conferences is, you get teams like Georgia who have to play Texas, Bama, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. But then you get teams like Indiana who have a strength of schedule of 103 right now.
Yeah, like, the only thing I thought that was fascinating was when they put that side-by-side, the old blind resume of Indiana versus last year Michigan at this point, and it was almost like identical.
And what was Michigan, like three?
Three. Now, I don't think... Where I kind of disagree with people is I don't think that was brand. I don't think that was brand. I think that was preseason expectations. Now, you can make the argument that those are related, and I would agree with that.
Well, and the only reason that Cincinnati made the college football playoff in 2021 is because they were...
They had a head-to-head win against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame kept winning.
Well, that, and also the year before, they were good. So they had a preseason top 25 ranking, so... they were already on the radar. That's why I'm a bit surprised at where Boise State is at already, right? Like, I give kudos to the committee for putting Boise State there, because history has told us if you were, and Boise State, remember, they had a stretch where they fired their coach in the middle of the yep. year last year. Like, they were not a great football team. They ended up winning the conference and, you know, went to the LA Bowl, and I was on the wrong side of that one. I thought they'd beat UCLA. They did not.
Yeah, I was on the right side.
That was ugly.
Yeah. I think that was like the most public, like Boise was like
that
the
was
most
a very public,
public
dog.
Cause yeah, Garbers was coming back, and Chip was scheming it up. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's talk about that loaded SEC schedule. We'll do that next with Blake Topmeyer right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. He is the host of SEC Football Unfiltered, podcast available each and every week wherever you find your podcast. He's on X at B Topmeyer. Blake, I guess let's start. Are you headed to Oxford or are you headed to Baton Rouge?
I'm heading to Baton Rouge. No bad option there. I don't know. The more interested I am by Georgia Ole Miss. You know, when we saw Georgia whack Texas, I thought, okay, that's going to be curtains for Ole Miss. Even in Oxford, Georgia's going to go in there and beat them. But you know, it seems like week to week, opinions change, and my opinions are evolving yet again on these two teams. I mean, Ole Miss looked as good as they have all season against Arkansas last week, and I think, just in terms of talent, we weren't totally off about Ole Miss before the season when we thought this is one of the top 10 most talented teams in the country, and I still think they are. It interests me, but I'll be in Baton Rouge.
I think that game, though, is only more interesting if Ole Miss wins, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, if Georgia wins, then whatever. I mean, then you write the obituary for Ole Miss's dream season that wasn't, and that's that. But yeah, it really takes an Ole Miss victory to be kind of interesting there. And if Ole Miss does win, it's going to start getting pretty crowded in the SEC. Like, you know, we talked last week about, is the bubble really going to be as crowded as it seems? And you know, I think I was expecting maybe a more crowded bubble than what you were, and some of your projection, I think, came to pass last week, where Clemson goes down, Kansas State and Iowa State goes down. I mean, it's, as far as any Saturday clearing up the bubble, you know, we got a little bit of clarity last week. But if Ole Miss beats Georgia, that kind of runs in the opposite direction, right? Then I think you're running in the possibility of five or six SEC teams for conceivably only four spots. And you know, you have to engage with the idea anyway of, would a 10-2 SEC team, aside from Missouri, they're out, but a 10-2 SEC team like Tennessee, would they be vulnerable? I don't know. It starts to become interesting if you think about Ole Miss beating Georgia and then maybe Tennessee losing to Georgia the following week. Then what happens? It could get a little tricky.
Yeah, if Ole Miss wins on Saturday, that Georgia-Tennessee game is even more enormous. Is it fair to look at some of the shortcomings for these Ole Miss teams under Lane in big games, whether it be last year against Georgia and Bama in 22, Bama in 21, or is it this team's gotten better and those teams have gotten worse? Like, I haven't wrapped my head totally around this game yet, because we saw Georgia at its best on the road to Texas, but in that game, Carson Beck still threw three picks. Like, that dude, he enjoys throwing the ball to the other team.
Yeah, Carson Beck makes Georgia vulnerable, and I don't know how good Gunnar Stockton is, partially because Kirby's made sure we really haven't seen much of him, you know, the past couple seasons, but you know, I know everybody's favorite thing to do is to change the quarterbacks, and I try not to just have these knee-jerk reactions. But as I was watching Carson Beck just make a mess of things last week, I mean, two of those three interceptions were absolutely on Carson Beck, just throwing passes he had no business throwing. it did make me really start to wonder, does Georgia need to evaluate Gunnar Stockton? Because, you know, if Kirby had, like, earned the right to just say, like, I know what's best with the quarterback scenario, trust me, I got this, everybody else shut up, that's one thing. But Kirby really hasn't earned that right. I mean, it took two injuries to JT Daniels for Kirby to play the best quarterback in 2021, which was Stetson Bennett, which we didn't know at the time that Stetson Bennett was their best quarterback, but that's kind of what the coach is paid to do, and Kirby had it wrong. He thought JT he wasn't. Stetson Bennett was his best quarterback. And then you go back to 2018, and Kirby stayed with Jake Fromm when he had Justin Fields on the bench. What would that have looked like? I mean, I think you could make a case that Georgia would have been better off that year playing a little bit more of Justin Fields. So, yeah, Georgia, I don't know, with Carson Beck playing like this, I'm starting to cool a little bit on the idea of Georgia as a national champion. But you look around the country, and there really is no flawless team. I mean, we do not have the superpower this year. I know there might be an urgency to say Oregon's that team. I'm not ready to label Oregon the superpower. As far as Lane's history, I don't think you can ignore it. It's not the end-all, be-all. But I do think in the past, Lane has had a tendency to maybe overthink these big games. We know he's a bit of a deep thinker. I think he kind of crawls inside his own brain a little bit too deeply in these big moments and overthinks it. So we'll see if that same Lane comes out on Saturday or if it's a little bit more, you know, kind of let loose and grip it or and rip it.
I think it also helps that Nick Saban's not on the other sideline.
I think it does. And that's like when we talk about this history of Lane and the big games, like you have to throw the one in against Georgia last year, certainly. But for the most part, we're talking about shortcomings against Nick Saban, right? I mean, that forms a lot of the conversation. They wilted in the clutch against LSU, but they beat LSU last year. So, he does have one against Brian Kelly. So, yeah, I think Lane really, really overthought it when he was going up against Nick and kind of twisted himself into a pretzel there. With Kirby, we don't have that track record as much. I mean, they got blown out last year. I think that probably said something about where those two teams were at that point in their season as much as anything.
I think it was also the only game Georgia last year had Mims, McConkey, and Bowers. I think it was the only SEC game that they had them all healthy playing the whole game.
That's right. And they were able to take advantage of what Ole Miss's vulnerability was last year, and I don't think Ole Miss had that same vulnerability. I mean, they went in the portal, they spent big, and they shored up their defense, and so yeah, I don't know that Georgia's going to be able to hang 50 on them or whatever it was last year. It seemed like it was 50. They were scoring every time they touched the ball. That's why I give Ole Miss a chance in this game is they have the defense to hang with Georgia. You know, last year's team didn't have the defense to hang with Georgia. Georgia's not as good as they've been at other points in Kirby's tenure, but also Lane's got the best defense he has had. Now, that defense didn't deliver the critical stops late in the Kentucky and LSU games, but it has also looked pretty good for most of the season. So it'll be interesting if it gets into like a fourth quarter scenario this time, can the defense do what it didn't do against Kentucky and LSU, deliver, a game-winning stop? Everybody will say, like, if Ole Miss loses this game, that the Kentucky loss cost them the playoff. And I initially thought that, but I'm actually kind of evolving my thinking there. Like, I don't know if a resume with losses to LSU and Georgia, considering who else Ole Miss played this year, like, I don't know if 10-2 with a win against Kentucky would have been enough. Like, I think the game, if Ole Miss loses this game and doesn't make the playoff, I think the game that undeniably we could say cost them the playoff was blowing that game at LSU. Like, if they would have had that win on the road in Baton Rouge, even at 10-2, I think they'd be in. Would the Kentucky game have been enough? I don't know if it would have been. But it's all a moot point now. If they beat Georgia, I think they're going to be in. If they lose to Georgia, they don't have a chance. It's over.
Blake Topmeyer joining us here to take a look at the weekend there for the SEC. All right, let's get to the game that you're going to be taking in. It is, in my eyes, an elimination game. I guess, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the hour. Maybe Alabama still could figure out a way to get in with a loss here. I'm fascinated by this game. Brian Kelly, coming off of a bye, has done pretty well at Notre Dame and now LSU. Night game there for LSU as well. You certainly have to be concerned, Blake, about the ability to slow down a mobile quarterback. Milroe went nuts on him last year. Marcel Reed went nuts on him just a couple weeks ago. How do you see this one playing out Saturday night in Death Valley?
Yeah, that's the thing I'm most interested to see is, with 2 weeks of preparation here, can Brian Kelly and that staff get this defense ready to face a running quarterback? Because there's going to be no excuses, no mystery. You know what's coming at you. Milroe did it to him last year, as you said. Marcel Reed, they could say, oh, well, we weren't prepared for it. They should have been prepared for it because Marcel Reed had started three games. But whatever, that could be tough to adjust on the fly. We've seen really good teams even have, over the years, trouble adjusting when a team makes an in-game quarterback change. But this time, you know what's coming. And Kalen DeBoer would be an idiot not to run Jalen Milroe. And Kalen DeBoer, particularly when it comes to offense, he's no idiot. So I have to think that running Milroe and at least testing, how big of a vulnerability is that for LSU is going to be a big part of the game plan. And then on the flip side of that, when Garrett Nussmeier has his A game, I still think he might be the best quarterback in the SEC. I mean, Jackson Dart's playing well right now, looked great against Arkansas, but I think A game, I like Nussmeier the most. Now, we also saw him have a meltdown in the second half against Texas A&M, so we know he's still got that in it too, but Alabama does not have the pass rush that it had at certain points during the Nick Saban era. It certainly does not have the defensive backs that it had at the peak of the Saban dynasty. So that's the other, on the other side of the ball, that's what I'm interested in, is like, which team can take advantage of the opponent's weakness better? Is Milroe going to run one wild on LSU, or is Nussmeier going to pick apart Alabama's secondary? It's possible that both happen. And this game becomes a shootout, and it's kind of like last one with the ball wins the game. I was interested by the spread on this one. I think it opened at Alabama around 3 or 2.5. Night game in Baton Rouge, I don't know. That it just, logic says that kind of tends to favor LSU, right? But I don't know. I guess the odds makers were expecting some money to come in on Bama or something. Or maybe it's just the name on the jersey. Bama's hard to go against.
I think it's funny. I saw John Ewing of BetMGM put, because what has gotten me in a pretzel with the Ole Miss Georgia game is that Georgia is a heavy favorite and the line is like basically stayed at 2.5. I think there were some threes out there for a while, but it's at 2.5. If anything, it's shrunk. And then they are pulling for, the books are going to need Bama against LSU, so it's kind of, that kind of ran counter to what I would have thought. The Georgia line would go up, but they're not really moving it up, and then they're just kind of keeping the Bama line where it is, and they actually, it seems like they are preferring right now if you take Bama over LSU, because it seems like most people are jumping on the, hey, I'm getting points with LSU at home.
Right, which seems like the logical thing to do. Of course, we know how that goes when you think you're playing the logic, right? But yeah, I mean, it is, getting away from that aspect of it, just like, this is what we were all wanting with the 12-team playoff, right? I mean, it's been so entertaining all season just to have, at times 30-plus teams in the playoff mix, and I think that number has been culled a little bit to about 20, 25 at this point, probably about the 20 range, realistically. But now to have a true elimination game in two different locations, in the SEC on the same Saturday, Ole Miss loses, they're out. Like you said, like, maybe Alabama could have this long shot strength of schedule argument with a loss, but they would, I think, need a fair bit of help. I think the way most of us look at it, this game Saturday night is an elimination game as well. So, yeah, I mean, the playoffs probably going to expand again, but I do, in year one of this, personally, without a dog in the fight, I love this format. I think it's I think it's worked pretty close to perfection really so far.
You know, the game that is off the radar a little bit when you look at the importance in the SEC, not going to have any ramifications for the college football playoff, but Vanderbilt has been this underdog machine. They are 6-0 against the spread as an underdog. Diego Pavia has been the breath of fresh air that program needed. But this is an interesting spot, Blake, and I'm curious what you've heard about it, because we've seen serious money come in on South Carolina today, bumping this line all the way up to 6, 6.5. It's a letdown spot, certainly, for South Carolina. My curiosity is, where is Vanderbilt out health-wise? Because they get that win against Auburn, but boy, it did feel like they were running on empty there. So I'm just curious, for Vanderbilt, they finally get the bowl eligibility. Everyone knows how well they've played as an underdog. I do wonder if they are just kind of full on out of gas as they head into this game against South Carolina.
Yeah, I do too, and that's the thing with Vanderbilt is, like, they've obviously made notable gains in their program, but the one thing that you do wonder about it is, does Vanderbilt have the depth? You know, I mean, I think their starting lineups, they made huge gains in those areas, but you do wonder, like, do they have the depth that you kind of need to lean on later in the season? And the thing with Pavia is, like, boy, that guy's taking a lot of hits, taking a lot of shots. And, you know, he did not look good against Auburn.
He had no burst. I mean, that was the ultimate Diego Pavia. Like, when we talk about if you put him third on your Heisman list, like, that's the one where I just, like, he did that just solely on guts.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just wonder, is he dealing with something? Who could say? And it really doesn't matter, because, like, he's the type of guy that, I mean, you just know, like, it doesn't matter what he's dealing with, he's gonna go out there. But you wonder, is this the same quarterback that beat Alabama a month ago? And I just have a hard time believing it is. And, you know, even if it's maybe not, you know, one specific thing that that's hampering him, like I said, guy's just taking a lot of shots this year. And they gutted that one out with defense, and Auburn's pitiful on offense, and that contributed to that and what have you. But I think South Carolina is a top 25 team, and maybe you could make that argument about Vanderbilt too, but I really think South Carolina is a top 25 team that got dealt a tough schedule. You know, they were right there with LSU, they were right there with Alabama, but you know, seeing Missouri in the top 25 and not South Carolina, that is based purely off record, and I'm not going to, you know, die on the hill over who's ranked 24th in the playoff rankings, because it really doesn't matter. I don't frankly care who's ranked 24th in the rankings. But if we're being straight faced about this, you know, South Carolina's got a better argument of being ranked right now than what Missouri does based on their performance. So yeah, when you add it all up, you know, when this opened, I'm like, I think I would take Vanderbilt in the points, but then I would probably be one of those guys that, especially before the line moved, my thinking probably shifted, and now I kind of like South Carolina a little bit more in this game, because I just think they're a pretty good team that was handed a tough schedule, and I also have it's taken me too long, I think, to get away from my preseason perception of South Carolina. Like, I thought they were going to be bad this year. I thought they were going to be one of the three worst teams in the SEC, and they're not. They're a middle of the pack team in the SEC, and frankly, so is Vanderbilt. But I think South Carolina's a little bit better.
We're wrapping up here with Blake Topmeyer, of course, senior national columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. You can always follow him on Twitter @BTopmeyer. So we also got the news that Billy Napier's the Florida coach for now. Would you